Welcome, this is the Sales IQ Podcast. My name is Luigi Prestoninzi, and I'm on a mission to help salespeople be the best sales professionals they can be. Each week, we'll bring you a different message from thought leaders from around the globe, so we can help you master the art of selling. Welcome to the Sales IQ Podcast. I'm your host, Luigi Prestoninzi. I'm pumped, honored, and excited that you've joined us for what will be an incredible and epic episode. This week, we are talking to Justin Dry. Justin Dry is a co-founder of InnoMofo, and it's a brand that is exploding. Has it happened overnight? No. And we're going to talk to Justin today about his journey, about, you know, the businesses that he started before InnoMofo that sort of got into InnoMofo, and then, you know, how he's been able to drive a brand and really challenge some of the largest retailers in Australia and what those challenges were and how he overcome them. What InnoMofo has done is incredible. He's partnered recently with the famous Gary Vee and Empathy Wines, and he's really positioning his brand as the go-to brand when you want to buy wine. And it's a really incredible story. And he talks about some of the highs and some of the lows of his career. Now, how does this relate back to sales? Because selling is about, you know, getting people to believe in your vision, in believing in the outcome that you're trying to achieve. So over the years, Justin has really had to sell his vision, not just to himself, to the people around him, but he sold his business previously. This is an incredible story because when he figured out that, you know, who he sold to wasn't aligned with the outcome they were trying to achieve, they bought it back, which was, you know, a huge decision that he decided to make. So this is a brilliant episode, and we also dive deep into the mindset that, you know, Justin develops so that he can be the best entrepreneur, be the best business person that he can be. So there's a lot of great takeaways from this particular episode. And I'm really excited about this because Justin is an entrepreneur that inspires me every day to be the best sales professional I can be. So before we get into the episode, guys, please jump online, jump on LinkedIn, connect with me. Also, rate us wherever you listen to your podcast, share it as we want that love and we want more people to subscribe to our platform. And we have some incredible guests just like Justin coming up over the next coming months. So guys, enjoy the episode and hope you know, get a lot of inspiration out of this conversation with Justin. Pumped, excited, welcome to the show, Justin.
Hey, buddy. Good to be here.
Oh, awesome, man. I know we've had a few technical difficulties and some user stupidity difficulties, but we're finally here, man.
Yeah, well, I've never seen a guy with a more expensive setup not be able to work it.
Well, man, I was super embarrassed. So I'm so humbled that you've decided to continue having a chat with us, man. So thank you so much.
Of course. My pleasure.
So, mate, as I mentioned, been some time we're trying to get you on the show because, you know, we are big fans of what you're doing. InnoMofo is an incredible brand and it's going global. But before we get into sort of how you built that brand, we'd love to learn a little bit more about you and how, you know, how you started in the wine industry.
Okay, so wine industry, I mean, wine's in my DNA. My ancestors planted some of the first vines in the Barossa Valley. So there's some Shiraz vines there that are, you know, 140, 150 years old. So I guess it's in the blood. Yeah. A couple of my uncles that you study at uni actually taught me at uni. And then there's another one that's also in the science side, a bit even more nerdy, I think. But I had those two kind of force feeding me wine from quite a young age, which sounds inappropriate, but you know, family Christmases and events and stuff, they would line up wines for me to taste, you know, and I'd be doing these blind tasting things where, you know, they'd line up three or four and say, all right, I need to know the vintage and the region and the variety, and I'd be like, I have no idea, I don't even drink wine. But it kind of, it was really fun, and I kind of got really hooked on the game of it. And then by the time I was 18, I was a complete wine nerd. I gave up my 18th birthday that my parents suggested, which was, you know, a whole bunch of people coming over, hiring a big kind of tent and having a keg kind of party. And I put all the money into one bottle of wine because I wanted to try a really expensive bottle of wine, which was the 1977 Penfolds Grange. It was my birth year, and I'd never tried expensive wine before. And I was like, oh, rather than a party, I'd just rather try really nice wine with my family and have a good dinner. So I guess it's kind of in the DNA. I got super passionate about it young, and then it kind of carried through for the rest of my life. I studied it at uni. I studied like wine marketing, which then ended up in a marketing degree, and then a little bit of wine making. I went and did vintages and made some wine. I worked in a wine store. I held wine tasting. So by the time I was like, you know, 23, I've done almost all the things you can do in wine at that age. Before I left the industry for 5 or 6 years and made my way back post that.
Man, that is, you know, well, if anyone's got a passion, you know, you've definitely demonstrated that passion from an early age. And when did you decide to turn that passion into an actual, into a business to make some money?
Look, I worked in the industry when I was younger, having finished uni, and I was deciding between, you know, is this a passion or a profession? So, I thought maybe after a few years in it and studying it and living and breathing it for so long that maybe it was just a passion and maybe it wasn't the profession that I wanted to go forward with. So I tried a few other things out. I had been starting businesses since I was a kid. You know, I had my first business when I was 10 and that was like lawn mowing and car washing. I had my first employee at 10 and a half who was my cousin. I also fired him. Because he was more interested in the lollies than actually doing the work. But and then, you know, I had a couple others, you know, when I was 14, etc. So anyway, long story short is I was super interested in business and I was super interested in wine. And so when I got to about 23 and I'd worked and lived and breathed wine for quite a while, I wasn't sure, maybe I should try something else. So I went and studied financial markets, became a stockbroker for a few years. That was the, you know, tech boom, so late 90s.
Yeah.
So everything I touched turned to gold. I was still there in the early 2000s when it didn't work as well, which was the tech crash. And all my friends that thought I was a genius in the late 90s didn't think I was as smart in the early 2000s. I kind of made a bit of money and, you know, lost a bit of that, but still had some left over. I didn't like the industry as much. Having seen what it looks like in an awfully tough period. So I tried something else, which is property development. Convinced a guy to sell me two big parcels of land with no money down. Did a first development on the first parcel, which is 15 townhouses. Pre-sold it all, made quite a bit of money. Second parcel of land, did the same thing with 28. And so I was a young guy with a fair bit of money and a few businesses behind me. And then I made a fatal mistake, almost fatal mistake of going guarantor for someone I cared about deeply and lost all that money. So that was the point where I decided to re-enter the wine industry. That was my late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah. So you've definitely had, you know, an experience from business in a range of things. And what I want to ask you, obviously, you know, the word entrepreneurship has become a cool word, right? But many, you know, have built businesses previous to the word becoming cool. And you're exposed to some challenges growing up where, you know, business didn't go well. Do you mind sharing with us, you know, the impact that your exposure to, you know, a family business not going well and how that shaped you to have the mindset you've got today?
Yeah, sure. So my dad was an entrepreneur, you know, he wasn't called entrepreneurship back then, and I think it was called sales. And it wasn't such a cool word, but I grew up in a family that was running its own businesses from, you know, when I was born, really. And I saw the highs and lows of that. Some of those worked, some of them didn't. There was some spectacular failures where, you know, I think I was about 12 and we lost the family home and everything around it. And that was pretty challenging to go from, you know, living, I guess, a fun, exciting, safe kind of childhood to seeing your family lose everything and, you know, having the house sold out from underneath us and the cars and this lifestyle changed completely. So that was like super challenging. And, you know, I think safety is such an important thing when you're a kid. So it has a lasting influence, I think, on your life. And you, even if you, I guess, go through the journey and think that you're have dealt with and are dealing with the things that have happened in your past. Sometimes it takes longer than you think, and it has an influence in ways that you don't recognize until you actually dive deep into those things. So I think seeing those ups and downs from such a young age has had a big impact on my life.
Yeah. And one of the things that I got the opportunity to see at an event you did, or you were talking at about a year ago, was your morning routine and how that, you know, how you really set your day up for success. And do you mind sharing, you know, what you do when you get up and why it's so important to you?
Sure. Yeah. I went through some pretty serious challenges when I was in my late 20s. I'd gone guarantor and I'd lost a lot of money, and my mum got sick, and my girlfriend left me, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, you're dealing with no money, you're now single, and your mum has cancer. So it was it was pretty awful kind of period of time, and I did kind of live in a way that probably wasn't very conducive to being positive and happy and successful. For a couple of years, I was kind of I was hiding a little bit, and I was living a life that was pretty unhealthy, to be honest. And I think there was a point in time where I realized that I couldn't keep doing that, that I had to face the music, step up, and give it another crack. And I guess I'd grown up really interested in like personal development, and I'd gone to lots of courses. I'd listened to lots of CDs, tapes, even though not many people would remember tapes, but those types of things to kind of get yourself in the right mindset. And so going through this really dark period, and then realizing that I needed to make a big shift, I kind of called on a lot of that experience and learnings over that, you know, last kind of 20 odd years to get myself back in the right mind frame. And part of that process has led to a daily ritual, which evolves a bit depending on where I'm at and what I need to be focusing on. But the basic structure is I've got a couple of things up on my bathroom window that I look at every day. One is a list of kind of four statements, which is around, you know, closing your eyes, feeling empowered, knowing what you're meant to be doing and stepping up and doing it. Kind of fit, you know, thing. And then the second one is two circles. There's an inner circle, which is where you go or can go if you get caught up in ego and darkness, and it's not a happy place. And then there's a couple of arrows that come out from that, which alongside words elevate up and solve, which means get out of the dark place, get over your ego and elevate up your thinking and solve the issue. And then on the outside circle is all the words that kind of represent who you need to be and who I want to be to live a successful, happy, fulfilled life. And so that's my kind of process. So every morning I look at it, close my eyes, go through that first kind of four or five steps. Then I look at the circles and just make sure I'm thinking about life and business and challenges in the right way. And then I get started with my day. And that process, you know, I add things to that and take it away depending on what I'm thinking about at the time. You know, there's also a series of cards that I have on my desk at work. So that's before I leave work, is that kind of process. And then when I get to work, there's a series of cards and statements and quotes that I read just to get myself in the right mindset for the day. So there's a couple of steps.
And do you find, do you mind me asking, are there any days that you don't, you know, do your routine, or is this something that you do every single day?
I try to do it every single day. However, there are days when I sit back and I'm thinking, why don't I feel good? Why am I not thinking about things in the right way? Why am I looking at the issues or challenges? And why am I not stepping back and up and thinking about the opportunities? And it's usually the days that I've forgotten to read my cards or forgotten to go through the process, because it's something that I feel, for me personally anyway, I have to keep on. I have to keep doing it. It's not something that you can slacken off on. And yes, you can miss a day or two here and there, and maybe it won't, because you know it builds up momentum over time. But I do notice when I miss it consistently, and I do notice most days if I actually do miss it. And I think it's a bit like meditation. I'm not sure if you've done much meditation, but I've done it for now like on a decade, and I think the times that there's times when you get into a real pattern and you start building momentum, and you don't actually realize how powerful it is until you then stop it for a period of time, and you see things change, and you see things kind of fall away, and you see the way you handle things kind of change. And I think it's only when you stop doing it that you see how powerful it was while you were doing it. And I think maybe those daily rituals are a bit the same in that. So I think meditation, getting right mindset, are things that build up momentum over time, and you only really see the negative side of not doing those when you let them fall either side.
Yeah. And how, you know, that mindset, I mean, this is incredible, right? To hear someone like yourself who's built a very successful global brand, you know, business, that's really reshaping the way people buy wine in Australia, right? And in other parts of the world. And I mean, how much of your success would you attribute to the fact that you've been so focused on developing the right mindset?
I think it's a huge chunk. I think there's, I don't know if I would have been able to do it had I not practiced those things over time, because mindset is such a big part of achieving anything, because every day we face challenges, and I think every day we feel fear. And so I think it's been incredibly important. I mean, there's so many elements to success in business and life. There's, you know, there's the right idea at the right time. You know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of luck that goes into success as well. But you have to put yourself in a position to actually be lucky. And I think putting yourself into that position takes a lot of courage. And I think a lot of courage is overcoming a lot of fear. And how do you overcome fear? You get the right mindset. And so I think it's the start point for a lot of success, is actually having the right mindset. So how much has it contributed to me? I'd hate to say 100%, but it wouldn't be far off.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, because I think we all face it, right? I mean, I try to maintain a very positive attitude, and you know, and I find that some days I am, you know, struggling to manage those, you know, the negative self talk.
Yeah, we all
imposter syndrome. You know,
we all do. It's about being human. That's what being human is. We all have our own challenges and fears, and it's how you overcome them. And it's not judging yourself for falling backwards in that thought process. It's going, okay, recognizing it and then changing it.
Yeah, see, that's awesome. And, you know, well, man, it's such an incredible story that you're sharing with us. And one thing that I love about the brand that you've created is, I mean, if we fast forward, you know, from the time that you were 10 with your cousin and your Sakti cousin into the point where you built Vinomofo, there was a time where your ownership structure changed of the business and went to another sort of integrated with another e-commerce business, and you decided to take it back from them and buy it back. Would you mind sharing what was motivating you at the time to take back ownership and drive the brand that you were so passionate about?
Yeah, sure. So we launched Vinomofo in 2011, and it was off the back of, you know, three other online wine plays that kind of built momentum towards the launching of Vino. The first one was about building an audience. The second one was about building a network of great producers that we became really close mates with. And the third one was about introducing some deals and offers to that audience through that network. And then Vinomofo kind of brought them all together. And so in 2011, we launched Vinomofo. It took off. We were growing super fast, but then all of a sudden we were getting a tremendous amount of pressure from some bigger competitors that were playing a little bit nasty. And we realized that we needed to scale pretty quickly in order to get to a size where we could be buying enough wine from our suppliers, the producers, our friends, that they could tell the people that were putting pressure on them not to deal with us where to go. And so we needed scale to do that. And there was two ways to get scale. It was to raise money and spend a tremendous amount of that on marketing, or it was to partner with someone who had a large audience. We kind of explored both paths. The business was, you know, growing so fast that cash wasn't really an issue. We were profitable and cash flow positive. So it wasn't about not having cash. It came more down to how do we get a huge audience really quickly. So then we kind of explored the partnership opportunity. We talked to a big media company who were very keen, But the other company that approached us was Catch of the Day, which is an online kind of deal site. They had gone into a number of verticals. One was, you know, mums and babies. Another one was groceries. And they'd started to play around in the wine vertical, but they didn't have a wine background and weren't doing it that well. Mm. They kind of approached us and said, hey, would you consider us buying you? And we're like, well, not 100% because that doesn't make sense to us. We still want a piece of the pie. So we negotiated that down to 70%. And so they ended up acquiring 70% of Vinomofo in about 2012. And we thought, well, you know, we'd rather a small piece of a large pie than a large piece of a smaller pie, that whole thinking. And they had 2 million customers. And so that was exciting. And we thought, well, if we can just get a percentage of those people, then that will make a lot of sense and we'll be huge. And so we did the deal and we sold 70% and went into the Catch group and were there for about a year. And it was really it was a great experience. We learned a lot, made lots of friends. But unfortunately, there wasn't as big a crossover as we'd hoped. We were kind of, they were very different audiences. Our audience had always been kind of premium to super premium wine buyers and I think the audience within Catch were buying kind of lower price point wine. So there wasn't a tremendous amount of crossover of customers. So that kind of small piece of a bigger pie didn't eventuate at the scale that we were hoping. So we decided about a year in that it wasn't really working for us and approached the guys from Catch to buy ourselves back.
Wow.
Which was a difficult conversation, but they were actually great about it. They understood because, you know, the guys that founded that were a couple of brothers. They started in a garage, very similar story to what we had. And so they understood it, but, you know, they'd, when they'd acquired us, they'd given us a little bit of money. When we bought ourselves back, we had to give them more. So from going from finally having some money to then giving it all back was pretty tough. But the right decision in the end, because as soon as we convinced them and bought it back, the business took off again. You know, it just felt different being in complete control. Our mofos, which is what our members call themselves, loved the fact that we had our independence back and came flooding back in huge numbers. And it ended up being one of the great periods for the business from 2013 onwards. We ended up being like the fastest growing tech company in Australia over a 3-year period.
Wow.
With growth rates at like 1800%. It was just insane.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was a good decision in hindsight. I know a lot of people kind of have this philosophy of like, you know, no regrets. And I quite often don't believe that. I'm like, well, if I could change some things, I certainly would. you know, but you can't, so you got to move on and learn a lesson. But in this situation, I think it was actually a good experience for us to go through that, you know, and we elevated up. We experienced business at a different scale than we had previously. We learned that things don't always go right. We saw the inner workings of a much bigger business. So I think all in all, it was a really good experience.
But, you know, that's a pretty bold move to buy something back, right? And when it's, you know, whether it was brand alignment or, you spoke about the mofos coming back. I mean, you know, that's a really bold move because I think there's a lot of businesses, from what I see, often struggle with the concept of, you know, growth versus, you know, my brand, right? And some make the sacrifice of, you know, chasing the shiny object of growth versus what's important to them from a values perspective. So that's pretty amazing that you decided to take it back. And was there any sort of fear at the time that you were making the right decision?
Of course. There's always that little bit of fear. There's always that in there's, you know, that little voice that's like, are you an idiot? but I think it was a really kind of fun, exciting, scary period because what we did when they bought 70% of us, they gave us some money. We took some money off the table. We did some things that were important to us, as in like look after the family. And so that was really nice. But then when we bought it back, we had to give all the money back. So it was a scary moment, and you know we had to give more than we'd actually received. So that was challenging, and we had no money left. So when we took it over, like the business kind of changed hands June 30 and July 1st, so that midnight point between those two of 2013. And so handed all the money back, leased out some new offices, took the team with us, and the first sale that happened after midnight was coming to us, and the sales that happened before midnight were going to Catch. So, So there we were, no money in the bank, a new office to pay for, about 13 staff, and relying on whatever sales came through post that point to pay for everything.
Man, that's insane.
So going from like this safety and security of very deep pockets from the previous kind of 7% owner and a business that was making, you know, was profitably growing to a point where we were taking it back. We had 13 people on the team and new offices, and we had no money in the account. So we were like, oh God, I hope this works. and for a business that we finally hit this successful kind of streak, and you know, we finally had this project, this baby that was growing fast and doing really well, to then risk all that again was an interesting period of time. But so, you know, there we are, we're all up at like midnight and we're refreshing the page every, you know, 5 seconds to see a sale come through. And at 12:02, a sale came through. It was like, you know, a couple hundred bucks. And we're like, yes, baby, we're back. And then we're all sitting there high-fiving each other and going, yes, it still works. You know, we're still alive. And then we realized that we had to sell another $20,000 worth of wine in the next week to pay the bills. Oh, God. But we did. And it grew really fast. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, and that, you know what, that's why the story of InnoMofo is awesome, because it inspires so many people that are wanting to take that step and not sure if they should take that step, you know. It inspires people to sort of take action and back themselves, and that's why I love about your story. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And, mate, you spoke about a couple of really tough times. In your business journey, what would be sort of, you know, in your mind, what's been the toughest, you know, battle that you've had to overcome in business so far?
The toughest battle to overcome. Well, funny thing about the more time experience I have in business, I realize that I think the challenges don't get any smaller.
Mm.
You actually just get better at dealing with them. So, like, I remember when, you know, previous businesses, even before Vino, you know, Vino Mofo's been around now since 2011, which is, you know, over 8 years, but we had three businesses in similar space before that. So I've been doing this online wine thing since 2006.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's a long time. And even before that, I think some of the things that kept me up at night, you know, those sleepless nights when your mind's racing and you think the world's going to end if something doesn't work, I think back to the things that used to have that impact on me. And nowadays, do they still happen? Yes. Are they much bigger and much more scary? Yes. I'm just better at dealing with it. Yeah. I think the things that used to keep me up at night, I'd like water off a duck's back now. So I think you just become far more capable of dealing with stress at a much higher level as you grow and have more experience in business. So what are the scariest things? Probably still to come.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
To be honest, to give you a more honed in answer, you know, what are the scary, the moment that before Vino, when I lost everything that was scary and hard, when we launched Vino and the competitors came after us really, really kind of hard and we're playing really bloody dirty, that was tough. When we went to acquire ourselves back, and the fear and risk around that move was scary but exciting. You know, there's lots of things. We've made plenty of mistakes. The thing about business generally, and particularly, I guess, in my personal experience, is you keep making mistakes and lots of them.
Yeah.
It's as long as they're kind of, you know, I think there's this kind of theory around, you know, two-way and one-way doors. As long as it's a two-way door and you can get back in, you shouldn't be too scared of the decision. If it's a one-way door, look out.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, you know, as long as you can get back in. So,
well, that's remember awesome. Sitting down, I went away with a bunch of entrepreneurs from Australia, and we went away for a weekend. And that story was, I think it was one of the Atlassian boys. It was Michael Scott. And one of them used that. And I was like, that's great. It's a really good way of thinking about hard decisions. You know, if you can recover and get back in, it's a safer decision. If it's one way, you know, it's something to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we look at selling, and when we look at selling and business, and you might not be a traditional salesperson, you know, as described, but what you've done is essentially sell a concept. You've sold an idea. You've gone out there and sold something just on a really big scale. So for anyone listening to this that's either, you know, at the start of their journey, middle of their journey, whether they're selling or they've got a business or an entrepreneur, what are a couple of, you know, key strategies that you could impart to say, hey, you know, these are the things that are very important when building business and building your pipeline?
So a couple of things in building a business, I think.
Yeah.
Look, people.
Yeah.
People are so, so, so crucial to a business. Like when you start, you're a couple of guys, girls, founders in a room, and you are really the culture of a business. You know, like what you say, do is pretty much what the business is. And I think as you scale, the demands change for a business over time, you know, so you go from being generalists and everything to specialists as you scale up. And I think the people you need at different times change. And so I think you've got to really understand who you need and when. And then you also need to understand that the importance of getting good people and people that fit the culture, because one bad seed can really destroy a culture within a business. So probably people, super important. Yeah. Two, I think it's so crucial, and it's a characteristic of so many of the founders that I know that have done well, is to stay super inquisitive.
Yeah.
You know, like people talk about this, but I keep, you know, getting smacked in the face by certain kind of ideas and concepts. And, you know, because you think you get better and learn over time, which you do. But if you're not dealing with accepting, knowing, learning these lessons, they just keep coming back at you. And I reckon being inquisitive is one of those things, because we can all get caught up in certain metrics. We can get caught up in pressures, but I think if you stay super inquisitive and always asking questions and seeing where the opportunities lie, I think it holds you in good stead for a great career, and it gets you through a lot of challenging periods. So probably people, staying inquisitive, accepting that some things don't work and that's okay, accepting that you're going to fail, accepting that not everyone's going to like you, and that's okay. There's so many challenges you're going to face starting a business and growing a successful one. And I think, you know, best of luck, because it's not an easy ride.
Well, that's some insane advice. That's some awesome advice to give anyone, not just in business, but in also selling. You know, I mean that's universal language. And I actually reckon it's for people that are looking to start a career or anything like that. I mean, that is, you know, having the right people around you. Always, you know, I think inquisitive is something super important. And then, you know, constantly asking questions and try to learn more. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And just before we sort of get to the wrap up of our episode, has there been anyone in your life so far that's really influenced your business journey?
Lots of people
have
definitely influenced the journey and the lessons, I think. And this goes against my own advice to people. I was never really great at asking for help. I was never really great at surrounding myself with people that were doing better than myself and had more experience and had different insights. And I got most of mine from reading books, listening to podcasts, you're showing my age, but, you know, listening to CDs and tapes and all of those things that we used to do that no longer exist. but yeah, like, I mean, I was inspired by the kind of better known entrepreneurs of my time. You know, Richard Branson was a bit of an inspiration. Read it, or I liked the way he lived life. You know, I'm a massive fan of islands, so it helps that he lives on one. And you know, he was courageous. He started a whole bunch of companies, and there was lots of failures, but lots of successes. And the way he's handled that, I think, has been pretty impressive. I mean, I don't know him personally, but from what I've read and heard, that's been quite inspiring for me. You know, I've read and listened to lots of different people, and that's probably where I got most of my lessons outside of actually doing it. Whereas today, if someone asks me, I'm like, surround yourself with good people, ask for help, still read and listen, but there's lots of people with great experience that are willing to share and help. And I think, I didn't do it as well as it could be, but you know, to be honest, when I was starting, there wasn't the same support networks. There wasn't the startup kind of groups. There wasn't the communities. There wasn't the events where it would bring these great people together. There wasn't the same opportunities as there are today. So, while I say that it's I didn't do it, there probably wasn't as many opportunities to do it.
Yeah, and that's, you know what? I love that, man. And just for our listeners that, you know, obviously don't know this, but I bumped into you. I actually been following you for a long time, and I saw you at an airport in Auckland, and just, you know, did the whole groupie thing, man, and hit you up, and you were more than open to me connecting with you, and you know, invited me out to Vino headquarters, and that's why I admire you so much, mate, and that's why I appreciate what you're doing in business. I think you inspire so many of us to really challenge what we're doing and be the best we can be, because we only get one life, we get one shot, and this is why people like you are really adding significant value to the business community, mate. So I want to say thank you, because you've inspired me and you've helped me on my business journey.
Thank you, mate. That means a lot. I actually remember when you came up in that airport lounge. Yeah, because you know that was my first overseas holiday with my now wife.
And I interrupted you at the end.
No, it was fine, of course. But that was my first overseas holiday with my now wife, who is 5 weeks away from giving birth to our first baby. So how amazing is that?
That is awesome. And you know what? That's the next challenge, the next exciting chapter of your life. The next is about to begin, man. Yeah, so I wish you all the best.
Oh, thank you. I'm going into it, as I do most businesses, ignorant bliss. I know it's going to be hard, but I'm not going to think about it.
Well, like you said, man, surround yourself with good people that can give you advice, because I need it, man. My daughter's 17, and you know, everything I knew about parenthood is out the window.
Yeah,
nothing works. So
yeah, well, the way I figure it is, look, I know I'm not going to have much sleep. I know there's going to be some really challenging periods. I know there's going to be times when we struggle, but thinking about it and worrying about it now is not going to make any difference.
Absolutely, man. So, mate, before we wrap up, where can our listeners connect with you and learn more about you and follow you on social, etc.?
Cool. Mostly Instagram, so it's just at Justin Dry. Yep. I'm on Twitter at the same, at Justin Dry. You'll see me on Facebook. And check out Vino. I'm always on the channels.
Awesome. So we'll share that in the show notes. And again, man, I really appreciate you being a guest on our podcast. We are super excited. Your name was actually number one on our board
when
we came up with our first 50. Nah, man, I'm serious. We've got it. We've actually got the photo. The very first board we came up, we had 50 names. There's still a few we haven't got, like Tom Hopkins and Brian Tracy and Gary V.
Yeah.
But you're up there, man. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you, legend. Thanks for having me.
Incredible. That episode with Justin really made me think about, what is my purpose? What is my mission? How am I getting up every day to drive and achieve what I set out to achieve? What I love about that conversation with Justin is that he's very clear on his purpose and what he's trying to do in his business and in his life. And he's setting up the right mindset so that he can ignore all the other negative influences that could potentially prevent him
from being the best he can be. So my challenge to you this week is, what are you doing every day to set the right routine so that you can be the best sales professional you can be?